Have you ever listened to the heartbeat of a rock? Have you ever had a conversation with a tree who had the longest thought? And by the time they answered you, you forgot what it was you asked. The vital sign is that if your heart is beating, you are breathing. If you have gut gas, if you have mucus, if you have moisture, if you have dung in urine, you're alive. Isn't that interesting? Because you have just qualified your life again based on this body. So who will you be when the last beat echoes through the slow doldrums of muscle tissue and the last great onslaught of blood rushes its last time to the toes? Are you alive? Oh, you're dead. What are you going to be? I say that you are having a conversation with yourself. That does not mean you are having a conversation with God. It means you have excluded that third opinion so completely, because you're having your own conversation. You don't even know how to speak this language. It's difficult to come to foreign people and learn their language. It was for me. Or should I say, this body, endeavoring to say through its seals what its brain has remembered to say. Now, you think because there are vital signs you are alive, so that's where your focus is, on being alive. What if all your focus could reach this no man's land, this great expanse of space? What if interfacing with the 21st universe was exactly the same as interfacing with God? You would have to move beyond time and space into nothingness. You would have to go beyond in a wide area where there are no lights. The great abyss, they call it. Black hole, they call it. You have to go beyond that. That means you have to leave all of this behind. So, the exercise of sitting still and focusing is to first recognize the internal conversation that it's you. Understand that. When you have recognized it, then I want you to shift your entire focus to that. Thoughts are not pain. Their reaction is. Pain comes because you're going against the grain in the pattern. Do you understand? The only one who changes the pattern is this, the lofty thought. So you're going to a place where you can't move, you can't talk, you can't socialize, you can't look good, and you shouldn't be eating. to where then if you're not going to do all of those things, that your fast is complete. It means that you are masterfully denying them their attention and putting your entire focus in another place, to nothing. Expecting nothing. The experience is to lose consciousness and time, to interface. It's the little soul that cries out in the wilderness. It's the voice that cries out. To go to God, what a prayer. No prayer was ever prayed with such fire and conviction as to sacrifice one's self. Do you understand the sacrifice? To give up one's chemical addiction and reach for the darkness, to reach where light is born, to reach for a greater self. This God would never deny you, mysterious one. For all that it is, has endeavored to have so many garments, to find the garment that is tattered and torn, that gives up of itself to say, let me be you, be me, do away with me, sacrifice me, but embrace me, everlasting. Only as I as a garment, only I as a garment could ever be beautiful if you wore me. Only I as a garment would ever know everlasting life. I do not want to die. Tear me. Burn me. Rot me. But I want to live forever in you, and I never want to forget that I know this truth. I never want to go back and be burned and be reassembled with faint glimpses and memory of silk and papyrus, and where it's a confusion, and I want to be you. Take me. Be my thought. Take my passion. Work the wonders. Make me what you will, but love me. Allow me to be worthy of your love. I am making the first call. I have learned what I am, and I am miserable. I do not want to be the sum total of my body. I don't want to watch it wither and grow old, only because I know it will soon perish and go to the worm. I want you, and you are everlasting life. So here is my sacrifice. I give up everything that I have been known for, because that is all I can give you. Me, my chemicals, my essence, my blood. I turn it over to you, my poor little body. I am willing to have none of these things. I am willing to suffer to show you that I am worthy to parley with, to interface with. I am the great metal that once was lowly and insignificant. Forge me. No prayer was ever worthier than personal sacrifice in this extreme. that great consciousness who sees the little garment with all of its might and all of its will, inducing the great consciousness to wear it. No creator of the garment would ever deny its child now awakened. That's what it's waited for. What it's waited for. But it's a part of evolution, you know. God could never have walked in flesh when flesh became. Only flesh could walk in flesh with the spark of life, certainly. But no God could ever have known all things immediately. Otherwise, what would be the journey? The journey now, then, takes on a different understanding. The journey is not about evolution in this sense. The journey is the prize at the end, being loved of God, being God. To boldly say, I am the I am that is. It is not I, meaning this, that did this wonderful thing, but it is the God within me that did it. But it is the God within me that did it. Of myself, I am nothing but chemicals. Inspired of God, I am eternal. Do you understand? This is the journey. And the journey belongs exclusively to the school. This is a journey, but it is evolution. It's the evolution of a species to wake up. This is the journey in the school, is this hard, hard climb. And now you understand that the thickest seals, the thickest consciousness, the densest consciousness, life itself by its very pulse is in the first three levels. And is it ironic that that is where time is also? And that must be mastered before we know love. Because love so far is chemical. It's companion. It's survival. We love people who give us something good to eat. We call them kind, don't we? But why is that kind? Answer me. Why would you call that kind? It's because that's what your body wants, isn't it? So now must we recalibrate what we hate in people and what we love in them? What do we like in people and what do we not like in them? What we like in them is all the things that our body can use, isn't it? What we don't like in them are all the things that we are not. That's why we don't like them. Simple, isn't it? So simple it is hilarious. Now you know why I laugh a great deal. Now, why would I take something away from you then? Why would I take something away from you? Because I love you. I don't eat you. I don't drink you. I don't borrow you. I don't need you. I love you. Isn't that just a little bit different than your proposal of love? Your proposal of love says, you've got to give me everything I want, be everything that I want you to be, and if you don't pay attention to me, you must not love me. Right, lady? Right? Do you know why you have relationship problems? Because you're having a chemical lack. It is the truth. And it all, I like this term, boils down. It all boils down to what you thought was a misunderstanding. Misunderstandings are the way you weasel out of directional intent. Now, it all boils down to a little misunderstanding. And the little misunderstanding is that I didn't want you today. I wanted to do my own thing. Your chemicals were not required in my fulfillment. Oh, what broken hearts does that leave behind, and the pity of it all. They must not love you. The truth is, they didn't. That day they did not. Because you didn't have anything they wanted. Oh, and then you start to feel guilty. I've always loved you. That goes without saying. It's part of the time spiral game. Now, so, if I didn't let you do a certain thing, what is one reason why I wouldn't let you do it? Because I don't want you to have something that you want, because the way that you want it, you would only glean from the experience what you want, and the want is chemical, isn't it? Why would I want to do that to you? Listen to me using this word want. Why? Why would I want to only teach you enough to satisfy you? Why wouldn't I want to beller at you and make you angry and mad? Because I'm so shocking that I break up the spiral and I don't give you what you want and I intimidate the hell out of you. Oh. Bad. Yeah. And I do have the power to do that. And what does that create? Someone whose eyes are wide open and their energy just shot right up between their eyes. And they want to do this. They're now ready to do it. However long it takes, just don't hurt me. Just however long it takes, don't kill me. Just make it happen for me. I teach you not by your standard. I know what's sitting on the spiral. When I look at you, I know what's sitting on your spirals. I also know your potentials. Sometimes you have great potentials down the road here because you created them in focus. How come they didn't happen the next day? Well, have you ever seen your agenda? Where were they going to happen? At what pause could they have snuck in? Broken in? Well, they didn't have any room. Kept being just rolled off to the next spiral over here. Because you're too busy. So, I see what's down here that you've already created. My God, you've had lofty thoughts. Lofty ones. In focus, you're starting to change. That's the deep chemistry. We're evoking mysterious one to try you out. The moment Mysterious One comes into play, everything changes. Because Mysterious One does not live on a time spiral. Mysterious One is eternal. What is the difference between a human being and a master? A master is ever present and has difficulty ascribing time, and must, for the sake, as a wonderful host to his guests, who this is their habit, this is their custom, it is the way of their life. But once you get this in, it is ever present now. Now you can't even begin to think in terms of ever present now. But it's sort of like this. There is no time spiral. You don't wish and want, you create. Wishing and wanting creates time spirals. Creation is the moment and it is eternal. Being a victim, being a tyrant, using excuses. You've got to have a time spiral to have an excuse. You have to have a time spiral in order to become a success, because obviously it hasn't happened yet. You understand? Becoming God has to have a time spiral. We're going to use it. And we are going to sharply move in this accelerated position. Sharply. Now, let's get down to understanding the field and the labyrinth. One phase of its understanding that today now you can swallow. Why is there a labyrinth, a tank? Why is it necessary? It's made out of some common and some uncommon materials. It's sort of like a fabulous body. The tank is a body. It is a body organic. The life of it has been created in certain angles so that by warping or distorting gravity, it distorts time. Gravity, time, speed of light, it does certain things at its angles. Now, these are not evident if you see, because seeing determines distance and space. If you see the labyrinth with eyes, you can markedly mark your steps, turn. Now, that is the prediction of chemical mass. We already know you can do that. But what happens when we do away with the vision that predicts mass? We do away with as much sensation of the sensual and put a consciousness in there. Yes, it's still body-mind consciousness, but we've handicapped it severely, haven't we? Haven't we? How many of you agree that you've been handicapped going there? Now, the reason the handicaps represent the ragged garment. Remember I told you that this would create the superb garment and it would be torn, it would have holes in it, it's not beautiful and smooth, it's a handicap, isn't it? Seemingly. But it cultivates humbleness. And humbleness, my God, can only exist in solitary moments when no one gives any care for you because you don't have anything they want. People are not loved because they don't have anything to offer to someone else. Now, so symbolically, we're going to handicap you. Now, the labyrinth then becomes ominous. And if you can't see form, you will become the victim of gravity. If you become the victim of gravity in its vacuum, you will become then the emissary of a timeless space. Now, this is what chemical bodies do in the first 3 years of their school. They touch base. Oh God, it's a wall. Well, they're not touching that, they're doing this. That's what it does when it's first starting out. And then, if it keeps finding itself in a canyon, it gets very frustrated, very organic, very fearful. Then it sneaks up its mask and looks. How did you do that? I just knew it. I have watched you do this and have allowed you to do it. Do you know what I have done with you? I don't pay a lot of attention to you anymore because I consider you very primitive. Very primitive. I keep telling you, we're in a school of ancient wisdom to evolve, and you keep determining that you're physical, and sooner or later, I'm going to give you the perfect opportunity to excuse yourself and go back in here. So I don't want you here. I want the one who can wear the garment of handicap because that is representative of focus and sitting there absolutely still. It's the same understanding. It says, I want to learn about myself. I will develop myself. And it moves in gravitational time. And its great tests start coming up. I clearly give to you your orders, things I want you to do and not to do. You always give me your word. You should have belched or passed gas. That's your word. The idea is handicap you and move you through the time spiral that is yours. Because you see, in a place where time is distorted without the eyes, you are going to start moving through this very rapidly. And what does that mean? It means that you are going to move through the patterns that have not yet manifested in life. You're going to move through them. You're going to start looping through them. And what are they? Well, you're going to face terrible fears and you may even get injured. A tear in the garment. It can be mended or left open so its light can shine. You may come to the edge of dying. That's on your time spiral. But however close it is, we're going to loop it into this weird time frame. And I'm going to keep you moving so you experience it. You're going to get caught up in tombs and tubes. The fear of dying or being caught by your own immensity. Or not being able to do it because you're too short. Or not being able to reach under because you're too tall. All of the things that you're afraid of, that you lack, they're sitting up there too. Social consciousness. You've got to be noticed. You're going to have an opportunity. No one's going to notice you. But the idea will be there. So your notice may mean that you have to stoop to a severe experience of hurting yourself and wailing about it. So you get a little attention. That's up there. And that opportunity is waiting for you too. The labyrinth is the unwinding of the time spiral. That's the reason the great labyrinths start in the nucleus, where the thought is, the void. It spreads out from above. It's seen as the lotus or the flower. It becomes symbolic of life, its opening. But it's all of its awareness is in the center, the place of the void. And the labyrinth begins to move and change. If you take the time spiral and lay it out, it looks like circles in the pond. Eternal spiral going linearly, which means it's in time. If you look at it from above, it looks like the flower blooming, the rose that has bloomed, sacred flower, the lotus that blooms, the heart of Buddha. If you see it from that, then you understand that all of its petals came from its center. The journey is finding the center, the within, this. So the labyrinth for your schooling at this date is this. And at every moment you are going to loop right up into what's sitting up there, and you're going to experience it. All the things you like about people, but mostly all the things you hate about them. Those, I like you, but all the buts are going to be in the labyrinth. And you will experience those buts. You understand? Now, why is it vital to the student? Because it's collapsing the time spiral. How many times could I send you through there that then you would become familiar with where the throngs hang out, and you could just see that, you know, neon lights, the Prince and Pony Inn, burger joints, sniffing of food, lots of people huddling around it, to places where you like to take your repose, a nice corner that no one has discovered you in. It's like little cities. And then there's the wayfarer that makes its way through and says, I have experienced this, and takes the next petal in and the next petal in. Then there are the people who, you know, they've got to be the best at whatever they do. And if they're not, they'll throw a fit. They'll get sick. They'll puke. They'll pass out. They'll go unconscious. And everyone's panicked that something terrible has happened to them. Take them out of here. Take them so far away that they don't see anyone. They'll gain consciousness the minute you do that. Or they cheat. They think this is a little game, and winner takes all. The moment those blinders come up, you lose this, and you get back into this, because you never gained the experience of it. And the experience to the adept is moving this and being able to master it, being able to master fear and death, walking to the edge and continuing on. That is the makings of a great master. Most can't even climb a ladder or climb over a worm without having terror struck in their hearts. Chemical people. If we do this long enough, then how does this affect your external life? Well, we've washed through so many of these that your life changes. Have you ever noticed when you have left, in particular, a great essay, when you go home, things are different? Things change. Pictures fall off of a wall and break. Your dog ran off. Your cat is pregnant. Things change. It's as if stuff happened. It did. That's why learning heightens evolution. And you go through a lot of things, but you're changing. You're moving through those beautiful petals. Great students love this labyrinth. Yes, they have fear, but they go there to conquer it, that they don't have to experience it in life any longer. Do you understand? That the tear in the garment is torn, it's all right. After you've experienced darkness and wandered around in a labyrinth, do you have a problem running around your house dark at night now? Doesn't bother you. And you get up and go look for things without turning on the lights. And it just occurred to you that you could see. Do you understand? And now giving up your image, how that soon takes its precedence in your life as well. You give up that image too. Do you see? And here's something else that happens. As we evolve and collapse the time spiral, endeavoring to interface, because I tell you constantly, focus on the void. It'll take you home. I'm telling you, focus on that lofty thought. It'll take you all through your life's experiences. It'll bring you to that sacred place that has been indicated as being the void. Every time you do that, we are becoming loftier and loftier, and we are breaking loose of this tremulous turmoil down here and able to fly. Do you understand? We can make it past this point here and start moving the energy up to here. That beautiful brain is going to open. And the minute it does, we want to engage it with knowledge. Fabulous potentials. The labyrinth is necessary because you stay in the void all day. And you're working through your time spiral. When you move to the name field, so empowered and literally broken free of this, that you're out here in no man's land when you move to that name field. And indeed, if you go straight to it, you are now so accustomed to being out here that when you focus, what are you doing now when you focus? How do we create this pattern? This was focused down into here. This in turn focused it into life, or mirrored it into life. Focus is the natural part of how life became. When you're out here, when I say focus on your fear or what you want to change about your body, then you are in such a place that that focus goes immediately to point zero. Focus, and it's as if you're on the journey, takes you right in there, you lose consciousness, and there's your card. That has manifested this that quick. You understand? Because you were out here. That's why, and I should have made this better. Yeah. That's the reason why it's at a slant. That when you reach no man's land in here, that if you've worked to overcome this, you have no image, you are beyond the chemical needs of your body and you're out in this and you start focusing, you are in the most powerful place to focus because all of your energy is sitting there as well. So the moment you focus there, it becomes, it manifests its life. You understand? Now, when we reach this area in a natural day-to-day existence, this is where the magical master is. That the embrace heals, that the touch changes, that the eye embraces and loves, and it causes such a passion in your soul, unlike anything anyone ever did. It can do this. Master can do this. I thought you should know about what you're getting yourself into today. You have learned?
Yeah.
How do you suppose that social consciousness then affects that which is termed the time spiral? How does social consciousness affect the fabric of the pattern? Is it possible to remake the garment, the present one that you have?
Yes.
Change the pattern? How? Me? For now. How is that possible? I want you to answer. I want you to know what the answer is and to be filled with knowledge so that you never have the abeyance of the excuse of ignorance. So, by what faculty and formula do you or can you remake the garment? Now that you are a little wiser, what is the true meaning of the story of the prodigal son? What is the true meaning now of the description and storyline being born of a virgin? Why is that important? But what does it really mean? Do you understand the significance of 40 days and 40 nights in the desert without food or water? Now, you jest at this, but you must understand that in the story that you are closely connected with, it is not a new story. It is actually an ancient initiation. It is, can that which is termed a very advanced student in this mysteries, are they able to transmute that which is termed the needs of flesh in pursuit of the needs of consciousness or spirit? Can they pass the test? And you must know that that sort of test and trial is given only at a very advanced stage, because there's not one of you in this room that could go 40 days and 40 nights without food or water. It's because you're human beings, and your chemical and your survival would meet its demise. You can't even miss a meal. So, do you understand how powerfully significant that was before entity was sent into the marketplace, that it in one aspect had fully mastered that which is termed the desires and the appetites of the body, that we had a consciousness that was so powerful that it could withstand food and water, the temptation of serpentine beauties, or princely places of the entire world that it could withstand such temptation. It had to, before it was ever released into the marketplace, that is the thickening hive of social consciousness. You begin to understand and see that truly great and inspiring images of antiquity were images caught up in this sort of study, that what made them so remembranced was what they were. And what they were was so vastly different from the flocks in which they came from. They stood out. They could take punishment. To this day, there are great brotherhoods that exist that pride themselves upon the amount of punishment inflicted in the body, and yet the body will know no pain. It will know no suffering. It will not bleed. It will not perish. That's how great they are. Alas, do you understand now what the crucifixion means? The sacrifice? What does it mean? Turn to your neighbor and explain that now. It's necessity. Do you understand the crucifixion and the sacrifice? Do you understand the death of the human being in order that the resurrection may occur into everlasting life? Do you understand what it means? I've spoken of matters today that have already faintly touched your life, but haven't completely engulfed it. The studies and the mysteries are too an evolution. You're only taught what you're capable of learning. And what does learning mean? Learning means to gain the philosophical introduction, all the knowledge, the words, the drawings, and then to be able to comprehend it into an experience. Thus the initiations, intentional initiations. Life itself is an initiation, but few ever make it through the completion. Initiation in the mystery schools is a powerful shortened spurt of life. Always that initiation will challenge the deepest point of your personal hysteria, your greatest anger, frustration, and will always challenge self-preservation and failure. Is that not life? So learning then is to learn about a certain thing and then to experiencing it. We are touching upon that which is termed the esoteric, or that which is termed the body without material value. We are touching upon a truth that is the reason why all real things exist. But up until this point, we've only challenged the realism parts of you. You've only been able to learn certain things, and you still have trouble with them. You still have difficulty being still. You have difficulty with your own preconcepts of God. You have difficulty with your own female gender and your own male gender. We're still struggling in the first three levels this late into the school. What would it be to whisper to you a language you would never understand? What would it be to give you all a very valuable experience instead of giving it to only a select few? because only a select few have the faculty to understand. They are geared for the test. Most aren't. The name field. I told you would not stay out there in eternity. Well, you know, a long time is a long time to me. A long time to you is anything past an hour. That's a long time to be doing the same thing. I watched you go through the motions. I gave you the sweetest wind. It was warm and balmy right off of the sea. Gave you a magical night to be rejuvenated and feel mystical. Have to set the stage for some of these things. Frosty morns just wouldn't be frosty morns without frost. I gave you a wonderful wind, an opportunity to get out and move, and all you could think about was how hungry and how tired you were. And you went through the motions. You didn't really focus. Some of you did, not all of you did. And you hang around this gate down here that one of these days I'm going to electrocute it. You watch. Lightning will come from nowhere in the sky and it will strike the gate. Remember, you heard it first here. Hang around the gate and you hang on the fence and you keep your blinders down and you think you're so damnable spiritual. Now all I have to do is just pull a little something like that and I know where I can take you, how far I can take you, and when you give up and die. There are wonderful mysteries yet to be unfolded. There's a deafening frankness that you need to learn about yourself. There is a calm that you need to know that exists in the space of nothing. Isn't that it? The calm before the storm? The calm before materialism? You need to know what that is and to experience it. Yes, there are many more things you do not know, but you haven't really taken a long look at the things you do know. Today was a brave and wonderful presentation because it inspired you, it saddened you, it made you laugh. Someone gave you some answers about you, and maybe they weren't the ones you wanted to hear. And you thought God should give you everything that you want. No. You can have the destiny of being a king or a pauper, the garment, the robes of ermine or the robes of rags. And you can make a choice to live your life as the one who lives in rags wanting to be the king, or the king who suffers his terrible responsibility wanting to be the pauper. You know, you can live your life as a materialistic, self-seeking, chemically gratifying human being. And there's nothing wrong with it. You haven't sinned, but you are damned in a way. because the king, in the final analysis, must give up his crown to his heir. All that he was, he must fork over before he goes into the tomb. Tomb. The garments buried forever. And the poor man, he must finally give up his rags. And he too must go in the tomb. Both meet the same end, whether wearing rags or ermine. There's nothing wrong with wanting to just live a normal life, whatever that means to you. When you become a student in an ancient school, when such as I teaches such as you, it's not a matter of being wrong, it's a matter of being a fool. In the light of all eternity, how valuable is the garment? You'll never be normal in this school. And you may end up wearing a lot of rags. That's all right. In the light of all eternity, what are they anyway? How can you measure your most arrogant pride, your most possessive thing? How can you even measure sexual love in the light of all eternity? How does it measure? School is about knowing what the light of all eternity is. That's why we don't have a lot of people in the school, because it's a hard road. It means that the pauper may have to become king for a day, and the king may have to give up his possessions to become dreadfully poor, so that each will value one another's life equally. The rich man never, ever had consciously more than the poor man. They both have the same. In the light of all eternity, it's the same. One isn't more valuable than the other. Do you understand?
Yes.
So these entities that I drew here, we made great folly and jest over. The people of the world. It's not us against them. It's them against themselves. Us are interdental. Us, as it were, are cleaved from them, a splendid few. Our journey is a hard one. No one in the world will ever understand it. How could they possibly? How could a silken garment understand the right of being of rags? How? Can't. And when you speak of things to be gained, how confusing are the Master's words when he says, "My kingdom is not of this world." He's saying, "My focus isn't about this world. It isn't about your dynasty. Indeed, it's not about your religion. It is not about your war. That's not where my focus is. It's not of this world." You understand what the poor lost master speaking to goats was trying to say? No wonder, he said, never cast your pearls before swine. I would never cast what I know before an ignorant world, or ever show my hand. They don't deserve it. They haven't earned it. So therefore, I will teach you only what you are capable of learning, what you rise up in sincere spirit and want to know. When you grow out of your silliness and your high emotional states and your pretense and your dramas, then we can get on to find real joy, that everlasting constant. When you start to mature out of an emotionally chemical body and start to master it, then you have true objective thought. And it isn't subjected to chemical analysis. Do you understand? I've told you all the ways and all the reasons why I love you, but also why I know you. Why whatever happens to you that you think is so dreadful, I do not think is so dreadful. Perhaps necessary. How godlike can a master be when it says to pluck out your eye if it defies you, or cut off your arm if it defies you? How godlike is that? How merciful? Whatever it takes, it will be done. It doesn't mean you have to cooperate. Only heal people outside of the school or people who are beginning to get into it. Rarely do I heal anyone in it. I don't want to. These people are easy to heal. They want it so much, they're so blind. And just a little ease from their discomfort will bring a little joy. That's worthwhile. Always heal those who are unawakened, but you never heal those that are awakened, because it's the malady that caused them to ask for help. Do you understand? And it is their malady that is the friction that keeps them looking for the answer. Do you understand? It's the friction. It's the tearing in the garment. I will always send you runners. I'll scare you to death and I'll thrill you. I'll always do those things that are necessary to build up the emotion so that we can experience a great initiation. But I'm not going to make you anything you don't want to be. I can inspire you and love you and laugh at you in your tears, embrace you and kiss your apple-hard cheeks. I can do all of those things. That's what I'm here to do. It's here because I want to. Now, what does all this mean? It means that in this little assay, that we're really quite serious about your transmutation. And that this doesn't altogether turn out to be the garden party you expected. And that, no, I am not going to give you everything you want. I may even hinder it. But what isn't given, something greater comes. Because there's room for it. My God, there's room for it. Do you know how cluttered and small you are? Perhaps